This is the October 7 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Garrett Toy. He's with AgTraderTalk.com out of Stockton, Illinois. John Zanker from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And Josh Linville joins us. He's with StoneX and a fertilizer analyst. He's in Kansas City, Missouri. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Let's start by having a discussion with Josh Linville about fertilizer prices, availability, demand, supply, and the global economy. Josh, thank you for being with us there in Kansas City, Missouri. I know you've been keeping close track of this. As I recall, it started last fall. Mostly that was a price move related to the price of corn. Can you give me an idea of how, for instance, anhydrous ammonia and then dry fertilizers tend or not tend to move with the price of corn?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, everything, I put the pivot point on the entire fertilizer turnaround back on the derecho event. You know, prior to that event, farmers were struggling with cash flows. And it wasn't just people talking. It was legitimately farmers were struggling with how do I afford all the inputs to plant an acre of corn next year? And so demand was nearly non-existent. And all of a sudden the derecho event happened. Corn prices started to skyrocket. Grain prices started to skyrocket. And at about the same time, we had a government subsidy check started to come in due to COVID. And so not only did the grain prices go up, but then a huge check showed up. And now we went from no demand, don't need it, and all of a sudden had to pivot 180 to not only do I need my normal fertilizer product, but I need more to maximize my yields for next year. At these kind of prices, I got to raise every single bushel that I can. And since then, it has been just absolutely hair on fire. 2021 has been a year of perfect series of events, black swan events. You know, looking for comparisons, the price of urea in the Gulf of Mexico, and I'm just using round numbers, has gone from 200 to 700. Potash has gone from sub 200 to almost 700. We have seen DAP from 250 up to almost 700. And then, you know, yeah, looking at the anhydrous pricing, those were down, I believe, 300, 350. And we've been hearing some numbers now getting floated around the industry, 900 to 1,000. So it's not just up a little bit. I mean, it's up multiples of what it was last year.
I will suggest that folks head to our website at willag.org. Emerson Nafziger, agronomist at the University of Illinois, and I had a discussion on Thursday about the production side of how to deal with the price of DAP, potash, and nitrogen, and what that might mean in the cornfield, and soybeans for that matter, other crops as well. You want to hear that. It's at willag.org. Look for the discussion with Emerson Nafziger. Garrett Toy, do you have a question for Josh Linville from StoneX?
I think the obvious question is, where do we go from here? You know, I think there's, once you get through harvest, the next 60 to 90 days, if for those who haven't already locked in fertilizer prices, you know, is something going to change on this dynamic, or is there going to be some cheaper prices for somebody who hasn't locked in something?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's been a very, very popular question here of late. You don't, obviously, a lot of people are drawing lines back to 2008. You know, anybody who doesn't learn history is doomed to repeat it. And so we look back and we try to figure out when's the last time we saw something like that. And the closest we come was 2008 when we set the record highs on all the products. And the fear automatically is, oh, prices fell out of bed back in 2008. It's going to do the same thing this time. But there's a distinct difference between 2008 and this time. 2008 was a very demand-driven marketplace. And that's to sit there and say there was never a supply problem. It's just that the next day or the next 2 days, the price was going to be up $20, $30, $40, $50 a ton. This is a supply-driven marketplace. This is due to a lack of supplies. Now, demand has its place, of course. But if demand were to just disappear all of a sudden for a little while, prices don't have to do anything. Producers don't feel the heat to have to go sell something. So that's a very long-winded way of saying that while anything is possible, there's always a chance that markets can drop or go up. I'm still leaning that there's a lot more upside in this. And it's because it's almost moved, like take the nitrogen for market, for example, it's almost moved beyond fertilizer. This is becoming a global energy situation. You look at Europe, natural gas prices have rallied all the way up over to $40 in the MMBtu. Now, they've since fallen since Putin and Russia's announcement they were going to flow more that way, but it's still well above any sort of an input cost that producers there can make fertilizer and make any money. So we haven't lost a plant in Europe. We have lost Europe. Asia is another one. Spot prices there on the natural gas have jumped. That's going to affect production. China, reports of blackouts, reports of a lack of energy there. And every ton of fertilizer that leaves China represents energy. So they are trying to do what they can from the government side to stop it. A lot of these products that we are seeing right now, the discussion is not what is the price of it. It's can I get the stuff in time? And that unfortunately kind of leads me to believe that we have not done near enough on the price. We have still got upside potential between now and next spring.
John Zenker, do you have a question?
I do. Can we put any numbers on this percentage-wise, Josh, as far as how much less fall applied we're going to see? Just a general percentage, how much are we going to be down usage-wise? And how will that impact the acreage?
Yep. And another good one. One of the big discussion points that we continue to have almost daily, if not two or three times daily, is, okay, let's start off with the demand point, the base demand. What are we looking at for corn acres next year? We've continued to use 91 million acres of corn for our base model demand, because that's kind of where everything shakes out. If yields are where they should be this fall, if demand continues like it is, that's where we think it should be next year. But there are a lot of fringe acres around the country that are not in I states that are truly struggling with the cash flow next year on their acres. Now, it's not to say they don't have the money for it, but it doesn't pencil out. And so then we start to have this discussion of like, well, do we start to see that demand start falling away this fall as they wait to see do corn prices rise, do fertilizer prices fall? You can make that decision to wait till spring. Looking at the three products that are applied in the fall, anhydrous, phosphate, and potash. On the anhydrous side, I can tell you at least today, and again, these will start to correct itself, but today, anhydrous represents a ridiculously cheap price when it's compared against urea and UAN. And that's what everybody's looking for. What's the cheapest route forward? Right now, anhydrous is a ridiculously cheap alternative from a nitrogen standpoint. Assuming Mother Nature allows us to go, and you know how it is. If it's wet, if it's cold too soon, we can't get out there with the toolbar. No matter if it's free, you can't get it on the field. But if Mother Nature allows us, this could be one for the recent record books. We could see a huge, huge fall application as everybody scrambles. I can tell you, my dad custom applies anhydrous in Northwest Missouri, and I told him, you better not let that tractor seat go cold once you start pulling that toolbar. And if that means you've got to have me out to run at nighttime hours, get it on the field. It's the cheapest stuff out there. So I actually think that we'll see anhydrous demand higher this fall if it's allowed. Phosphate demand, potash demand, we have talked at anywhere from we could see a drop in demand 5%, and there are some horror scenarios where it could be 50% down. And that's simply because farmers may make the decision to wait till spring. They may have actually been building their soil levels at the really cheap levels and say, hey, you know what? I don't need to apply this year. I can mine the soil. Maybe they can only do partially that. But you've got to believe at these kind of prices, you will see a drawback on demand. Normally, that would mean prices are under pressure through the wintertime. But the problem is the world is so tight. If we end our season very disappointed in our demand and inventories are very high coming into the winter months, well, the producers are just going to sit there and say, well, fine. North America doesn't want it. I'll ship it internationally. You know, Florida used to ship millions of tons to India and different places like that. They've not lost that capacity, and they can definitely fire it up again if the market calls for it.
I'll make note here that Emerson Napsiger, when I talked to him about nitrogen prices, suggested that even at the high prices at the moment, that nitrogen remained profitable for corn in 2022. But of course, you have to have $5 cash prices to make that work over time. You mentioned, Josh, holding off some farmers potentially on the other products and application. Many will think that that's a possibility. And in the I states, again, in good soils, that's probably okay to do. However, I'm wondering what the price of those two products do generally. For instance, we know that anhydrous ammonia, nitrogen, goes up and down in price with the corn. It's very well correlated to price of corn. However, I'm not certain that's the case with the other two products.
And actually here, so one thing that I try to do on a weekly basis is I always look at the relationship between corn and soybeans and wheat against each fertilizer. My perspective, and I don't know if this is unique or not, but just something we do a little bit differently. I kind of view a farm as not much more than a manufacturer. And what I mean by that, it's not to say only a manufacturer. That's kind of a bad way of putting it. But you're trying to produce the most number of outputs for the least number of inputs, right? And so your outputs are bushels and your input is fertilizer in this case. So rather than getting focused in on just the flat price, we should act like a manufacturer. And so what we do is we look at the spread between the two products. And basically what we say is how many bushels of corn, for example, does it take to buy a ton of urea or UAN or phosphate or potash? And when that ratio is really low, you're spending less bushels for the same ton. And that keeps more bushels that you get to go market at a pure profit that you would have otherwise spent on your fertilizer. And right now, if you look at it, we are actually, if we are not highs that we have seen since 2005, it is very, very close. These ratios are extremely high. Yes, the price of corn has gone up. Last fall before the derecho event, I think we were down around 375. Today, December 22, is sitting around 525, 530. We like higher corn prices. But when your price of phosphate goes from $250 to $700 a ton, it's the worst deal for the farmer. So yeah, these ratios right now today are, they're not attractive. They are telling us we should do what we can to cut back wherever possible. And the next time we see that dip down to a very low level, we should take an opportunity. We should take the advantage of that low ratio and build up those low levels at that point.
Garrett and John, you know that I'm going to ask you about how producers ought to protect themselves when they do make the purchases. We'll do that in a moment. However, Garrett, I wonder if you've got another question.
Does he think that perhaps as this becomes more fluid and prices continue to increase, is there a possibility that those who have already locked in some sort of inputs would sell them back and make an acreage switch and take that additional profit and put it towards their P&L?
That's actually a good question, but I don't know how much the farmer is willing to do that. And it, just because the market isn't really built to go that direction, right? Because all of a sudden now the farmer's having to sell that back to the retailer, and then the retailers have got to go find somewhere else to go with it. And frankly, a lot of the retailers, they don't talk. And so they got to go find a market for it. Not to say that's not a possibility, and maybe that might be the right decision, but that's going to be a that would be a little bit more of an uphill road to have to walk.
So now let's turn directly to marketing the corn and the soybean crops. And Garrett and John, I'll start with you, John. I warned you we would talk a little bit about this price of fertilizer. And this comes from something that Daryl Good always told me, which was if something causes you to do something, then you need to make a sale. So if high price causes you to put extra acres of corn in, you make a sale. Or if it causes you to put wheat in when you didn't, you make a sale and cover some of that price. The question is, can and should you use that same kind of thought process as it relates to the high price of fertilizer this fall? Or on the flip side, if you're caused not to do something as well? And I guess, John, I'll start with you.
Well, it's a tough decision for producers right now, Todd. We, sitting here at 5.25 new crop corn, that's not terribly exciting compared to what we saw here late in the spring. And of course, we have an input situation that's close to being off the charts here. It's close to 2008, as Josh mentioned. I think producers have to give a real strong look at their acreage mix. Is 50-50 the way to keep going here if you're a corn and soybean producer? Wheat, look what we're doing with wheat. And, you know, there's already plenty of models being shown that if you're south of 70 and you can do a nice job of double cropping, that putting wheat out and following it with beans is better than corn right now, due in large part to those input costs. So cotton prices have been going crazy here over the last 12 sessions. I think we're up 25% over the last 12 sessions. So I see a large acreage shift. And I think the only thing that might prevent that is the price of corn going higher, maybe substantially higher in the coming months, and that may buy back some acres. But and of course, soybean prices coming down, that may allow a few more acres to stay with corn. But I don't think we, if we're going to get a post-harvest bounce in December corn, and we probably will, I think that's going to present some pricing opportunities. I don't think the situation at this point tells us that that we need to wait till six or six and a quarter to get some sales on. I think that to 5.25 to 5.75, you know, we're certainly going to be pricing some corn. We have not priced any corn yet, but we have priced soybeans, you know, and if we can chat about that here in a bit, but very, very concerned about the price of soybeans at this point and how that might impact additional corn acres.
Garrett, before I get to you, I want to check one other thing with John here, because the corn soy ratio is 2.3, I think, to 1 in favor of corn now, rather than the 2.5 that it normally would. So 2.3 bushels of corn to make the price of soybeans, rather than 2.5. And you still think that those acres won't be planted?
Well, again, it's that input cost, and it's oppressive. And if we happen to see the price slide here in the next 2 to 3 weeks, again, tilting things maybe back towards soybeans a little bit. But I was hoping we'd have a chance to sneak up on this market a little bit. We were seeing some private analysts, you know, and publications throwing out 94, 95 million acres of corn. And I was just shaking my head and saying, hey, I don't think somebody's paying attention to the price of inputs here. But on the flip side, I think we're in a great danger of taking soybean prices down substantially if the USDA throws a big yield at us over the next 2 months. Exports are falling apart on us. And, you know, probably the biggest drawdown on corn price right now is the price of soybeans. And you can kind of say the opposite as well.
And Garrett Toy, your part in this discussion, coming back, is there anything that producers need to do, in your opinion, to manage risk for the 2022 corn crop and soybeans?
I go back to your quote from Darryl Good, and I agree that if you do something, that's your only way to really, if you're forced to do something, and you're forced to, and nobody is forced, but if somebody does decide to pull the trigger on their inputs, selling some 2022 corn is really about the only way for yourself to hedge that. You know, Josh had mentioned that some of these ratios are starting to get out of line a little bit, but if you do decide to lock in something, if you need to lock in something, you should also sell some corn against that, because if the price of fertilizer goes down, well then, you know, most likely the price is going to go down to some extent as well, even though, you know, Josh mentioned some of these ratios are getting tweaked and out of line. At face value, at current values, like John said, and you have to keep in mind that I think that some of the producers' thought process is influenced right now by what they're seeing in the combine, you know, corn yields and soybean yields. I think at this value, at this point, you know, the ratios, and at least in the majority of the I states, the market still favors corn. And that may shift. I agree with John. I mean, especially on this yield front, on what these private yields look like versus what the USDA is that, you know, I think there's some, you know, potential to increase bean yields on a percentage basis greater than what there is on corn. But obviously this Gulf situation has really created some situations more for the bean S&D more than the corn S&D at this point. But I agree with Darryl Good 100%. I mean, if you do pull the trigger on some fertilizer, that's the only way to really hedge it, is to make some sales. And I think that if you market against your APH north of $5, you know, and have your inputs covered, I think you'll be okay. in the long run.
Let's turn our attention to this year's crop. What are you hearing, Garrett, about corn in Iowa? I know that you keep pretty close tabs there, and how it's yielding this year.
It's surprising. It's better than what we thought. You know, even with the dry areas, and that's the one thing about Iowa is Iowa tends to do better, and because of the conditions of the soils, Iowa does better in a dry year than they do a wet year. And I think the Iowa yields are pivoting higher, and I think the Illinois yields might have been overstated, to start, because it seems like the Illinois yields maybe aren't quite as good as what we thought they were at front. But you know, I kind of am I aggregate all the private yield estimates, and from what I've seen so far as of October 7th, the private yield estimates or bean yields are running 2% over where they were this point last year, which, you know, on a 51 bushel yield, we have that revised number from last year, that suggests that the national yield could be 52 bushel. But at the same time, the corn yields, these private corn yields are averaging 2% higher as well. And that suggests 175, which is actually below the USDA's number here. So, I mean, kind of agreeing with John said, is I think there's a little bit more potential for bean yields to increase from the USDA at this point forward than perhaps corn yield. But the Iowa corn yield, it's going to be better than we were in September as far as NASS is concerned.
What do each of you, and I'll start with you, John, think producers should do with the crop that they need, must haul to the elevator for both corn and soybeans?
Definitely a seller of soybeans. We're heavily priced. We're probably 90% priced. And if I knew exactly how many bushels we had, we might be 100% priced. And we have some additional downside protection on as well. And we started selling some of next year's crop. So I think that, seeing just a little bit of a bump here in the Eastern Belt on basis as we have gotten a little bit soggy. So yes, straight off the combine, be done with it, and look for some opportunities perhaps to re-own at some point. Corn, a little bit more difficult. We have some carry. We have good carry in the soybean market comparatively to what we've had in the past, which is again not positive for flat price. But if you're going to put beans in the bin, at least you have a little bit of carry there. But corn, some carry as well. And again, I think the possibility is stronger that we could see some price appreciation. But if you have a strong basis, if you have a processor that's still hunting for corn and we get bogged down a little bit, I wouldn't hesitate to move some corn here if you're seeing cash prices at 5.25 to 5.50. And I'm saying that with having a sold position lighter on corn by quite a bit than where we are on soybeans, Todd.
I agree with John. I mean, the only aspect I'm curious about as far as soybeans are is that the money market length in the bean market has already paired, a good deal. And they're essentially even. But with this inflationary issues that you have in the market, you've got $80 crude, you got soybean market trading 62 cents today and just like a rocket ship. How cheap are beans going to get? And I think that, as long as this renewable diesel story remains and we continue to pump money that direction, soybeans might begrudgingly be pulled higher. It's not bullish, but it prevents what could be as far as bearishness is concerned. We've been selling beans out of the field. In fact, I think last time we were on, we talked about, for those who wanted to protect or who were planning on selling out of the field, the hedge them at $13, because by the time we got to this point, we wouldn't be at $13. And here we are, we're $12.50. I think the Gulf had a lot to do with that because of how China was buying and the issues they have over there. The $64,000 question for a lot of producers is for corn, you've got 550. You got 550 board price. Are you going to store 550 corn, or a 550 board, or lay it off? And I think a lot of people are going to. I think that the general MO is to sell beans out of the field and store corn, but I think some people look at if 550 is here, you know, lay off that risk and re-own and pay some bills.
And what's your thought? Should they or should they not?
I think a bird in the hand's worth two in the bush, especially with the input prices that we have right now. You know, if they have to lock in some fertilizer prices or inputs for next year, 550 is a good price.
Any follow-up, John?
If you go back a year, Todd, every week, every report, every weekly sales report, shipment report, were not as long as we thought they were going to be. Every report was bullish last week or last year for soybeans at this point, and that lasted almost through the entire marketing season. This year, it's exactly the opposite. We never saw the basis increases that we thought we would this summer, certainly not. Crush has fallen off a cliff. Exports have fallen off a cliff. Today, export sales, not bad. Close to, 38, 39 million. You look at that and say, that's not bad. We were 2.5 times that a year ago this week. So we're so far behind. The USDA has us down 170 million projected from last year. We're already down that plus some, and we're only going to fall further behind. We should be shipping 100 million bushels here per week soon. And I think we'll really struggle to see some of these weeks get to 60 to 70. So we're heading for a problem here that's only going to be corrected if Brazil and or Argentina run into some problems. And La Nina is still working down there, so that's a possibility. But if we have no problems in South America, we're not going to have 11 in front of futures come March 1st. I just think that's almost a guaranteed at this point.
Next Tuesday, USDA will update the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. We've given a number of those figures, or you two have, but I would like you to go through the supply and demand table. What do you think it will look like given the new carry-ins that USDA gave us from the quarterly grain stocks?
Well, I'll take the soybeans if Garrett wants to handle the corn and make it a little simpler there. But USDA on the 10th of September had the new crop carryout projected at 185, given that the stocks number, the old crop stocks number, was raised to 256, and that was an increase of 81. If no other changes are seen in that on the supply and demand tables, no changes in yield, you're looking at now a projected carryout of 266. So that doesn't strike much fear into too many hearts. It's still tight. But now, if you increase the bushels or bushels per acre, the yield, just a half a bushel, that's 43 million, you're up to 309 million. And the last time we were in that territory, we were seeing corn or farm prices under $10. If they raise it a bushel, you're at 352 million. And that's without taking exports down. USDA typically doesn't lower exports this early in the season, but we are so far behind that we shouldn't be surprised if they do. But I think over the next two or three reports, we'll see 75 million come off of exports. With a bushel increase in yield, you're looking at a 427 million carryout, Todd. And the last time we did that, that's about a 9.9% stocks to usage ratio. The last time we did that, we had an average farm price of around 933. And then the previous year of 947 with an even tighter stocks number than that. So we have a problem with soybeans, and it's going to take a scare in South America. And right now we're not having too many scares. Argentina's dry, but we're seeing some pretty decent rains in Brazil, certainly versus what we were seeing a year ago.
Yeah, we came out here at the end of September. USDA kind of surprised trade a little bit with this bigger stocks or step one stocks number. I think what's important, though, we came out at 1.236. That's 80 million bushel above where the trade is expecting. And it was about 50 million bushel above where we were in the step WASD. So that's going to work things higher. Now, the interesting thing is, the one thing coming off a stocks report is that stocks report implied – the worst feed residual usage in corn since 2016. So, and then once you got these final numbers, the export and, or the census exports here this last week, and the final ethanol numbers, those numbers actually came in a little bit higher. So it made the feed and residual numbers look even worse. So that's going to be the big thing is that if we have an increase in production for whatever reason, next week, the USDA tends to offset some of that typically by about 50% in the feed and residual column. And given what the SEP 1 stocks numbers look like, those numbers seem light. It's almost to me, it looks like they almost seem impossible, but that is what it is. But the fact of the matter is the trades coming in here, for this report, we're looking at 1.432 carryout with a yield at 176 is actually down a little bit. I actually kind of agree with that based on what I'm seeing on the private yields. But a 1.4 carryout is still going to be, it's going to be bigger than last year, obviously. But it's going to be relatively tight, and it's going to be under typically what you would argue is that 1.5 pipeline type number that suggests whether the corn situation is tight or not. And that's kind of the line in the sand at this point. So I don't think we're going to, given the ethanol data that we've seen so far this year, we're actually running at or maybe a little bit ahead of the USDA's number. I don't think they'll adjust that. If they do, maybe higher. The corn exports at this point are struggling. We're not doing sales because we're the most expensive corn in the world. And I think the biggest risk is we had the USDA attaché report out this week talking about China corn imports, where they suggest that China could eventually cancel some of the corn that they have on the books. At this point, I don't see any adjustments to exports, but I think that's going to be something we're going to be talking about in coming months is how China or what China is going to do with the corn they have on the books and whether they make any additional purchases.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Josh Linville from StoneX. He's a fertilizer analyst there in Kansas City, Missouri. John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. And Garrett Toy from AgTraderTalk.com in Stockton, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.